Here is Geek Radio Daily with a moment from RavenCon 13.5 2018. This is the evening panel where we got to talk about what some people call Geek Christmas, Halloween. I don't mean to alarm you, but there's a spider behind you. And a skeleton inside you.
Oh no, I'm turning into Cedric where I have like 7 stage names.
Yeah. Yeah, you get used to it.
Yeah. My favorite Cedric name though is Rex Hamilton.
That's a good name.
He's the best Abraham Lincoln performer ever.
He has to be.
He dies every episode.
Rex Hamilton.
Abraham Lincoln. And he's dead. That's it.
All right, let's go ahead and kick this panel off. Hello and welcome. We are here to talk about Halloween. Now, I know that it was referred to in the program as Geeky Christmas, but that still puts it in a secondary place. It is so very different. I believe that Halloween probably had yard decorations long before Halloween, before Christmas did. Halloween had presents long before Christmas did, and trick-or-treating candies and stuff like that. And Halloween is the one that still proudly proclaims itself with its pagan origins, as opposed to Christmas, which tries to hide them. Let's go ahead and introduce ourselves. We'll start down there with you, Syrinx, and what your tie to Halloween is.
I was a zombie for the Haunted Graham's Mansion that is located up towards Woodville, Virginia, for 2 years, the 2016-2017 season, if I remember correctly. What's cool about that mansion is the lore behind the mansion itself. It was on Ghost Hunters. They did a whole episode around it. Really, really awesome place. Halloween for me is like the entire month of October. It is 31 days for me. Unless you're a Ministry fan, then every day is Halloween. But it is. It's like, I'm one of those people, like, I make it a point to make sure that the music of Halloween is heard. One of my yearly traditions on my Facebook and Twitter is that I will post a Halloween song every day to show the Christmas people that there's enough music for our own holiday, and it's a lot less depressing.
Yeah, it's not just the monster mash.
Yeah.
I'm Pamela K. Kinney, and I've been doing Halloween. It's been my favorite whatever since I was a kid, and I like the scary stuff. I admit that. Why I'm writing the scary stuff, right? To me, I celebrate it, and to me, it's. I really think it probably really started off with my generation. I think the whole stuff, growing up with all the stuff that we loved, including Peanuts. I mean, start with all that. It's just embellivated and kept on. And actually, I'm not talking about 31 days. I start celebrating in September. Where were you born?
So. I'm Carol Foles. I'm the Sue Mistress on GeekRadioDaily.com.
Ding!
And I've loved Halloween ever since I was a kid because I could get free candy. And all I had to do was pretend to be somebody I wasn't. And that suited my personality very, very good. So, and I do celebrate Halloween for the entire month of October, but it bleeds into every month, because to me, October is just the time I shop for home decor, because it's it's like, oh, yay, all of the skulls are finally back in the home decor skull in stores. I can go shopping for my living room and bedroom and stuff.
My name is Rich Siegfried. I'm also known as Podcasting's Rich Siegfried on the internet, and my burlesque name is Richie Munster, which should tell you a little bit something that I enjoy Halloween. As a kid, we're talking about Halloween. Come on in, guys. And I started off with watching The Addams Family, and really kind of aligning myself far more with the things that were in that show than the majority of the sitcoms and whatnot that were in cartoons that were on TV as a kid, and same with the Munsters. The first time that I had a really good Halloween experience was I was 8 and had always gone trick-or-treating. And there was one particular house that just had a dummy in one corner and another dummy in the other corner. And the one that was sitting down had the bowl of candy. And so you'd go up, you'd ring the doorbell, you'd be looking at this wolf man that was kind of looking at you, and nobody'd answer the door. You turn around, and the scarecrow that was sitting was automatically just jumped up at you. And it scared the crap out of me. And then they gave me some candy, and then I ran out to the street and was immediately like, have you guys gone to this house? They have the best candy. Go check it out. So I was driving traffic to them. And then over the years, when I was a senior, I did my first home haunt, specifically for the neighborhood. And I had very limited resources, so I used whatever I had. I just made like a little room with some sheets hanging down, and then I would wait until somebody comes up and had spooky music and a little bit of lighting, whatever I could find around the house. And people would go up there, and when I saw them coming, I would hop down, walk around the bushes, and then just be standing right behind them. When they would get their candy, turn around to leave, and they would scream, they'd drop their candy. I ended up netting more candy than I gave out. It's fantastic. And then I've gone on to run pro haunts, semi-pro haunts, yard haunts, home haunts, as well as I run a home haunt for my neighborhood kids every year. And the very first, and I've also connected with all the other houses that do like really big displays or walkthroughs. And now I do, instead of trying to scare kids, I actually try to do a very kid-friendly Halloween experience, where a lot of times there's a story involved where I get a couple of my actor friends, and they are kind of acting out the story, telling the story. Even the little ones who were too scared the first year to come up, now they come up because they know that they are still going to get a Halloween experience. It doesn't have to be scary, it can still be fun, and it can still be spooky. And then I give out little flyers to all the other haunts that are around. I'm like, if you like this and you want to get scared, go to this one. And so we all try to drive traffic to each other so that way everybody can have the kind of Halloween experience that they want. So what is it about Halloween that draws you, besides the candy, which is obviously a very important aspect? But Sarah, with you, what is it about Halloween that just draws you to it?
Honestly, I mean, to kind of tie back to the title of the panel, it is the geekery. It's the makeup. It's the prosthetics. It's the creativity of making haunted houses and stuff like that.
Would you say it's kind of like the cosplay holiday?
Yeah, actually, I mean, on a gorier sense, but yeah, totally. I know when I did the haunted house gigs, I loved being a zombie. It was probably one of the coolest things. The area that I was in had overturned cars, and so I kind of played it up as I was a driver who flipped over, and you know, here I am 8 hours later. I woke up and roaming the path.
Nice.
You know, it was. I don't know. It's. And then for me, like, just doing theater stuff anyways, like, I'm into makeup techniques and, you know, I'm still old school. Like, I still make my stage black using the Karo syrup and the red food coloring and a little bit of blue food coloring and a little bit of vanilla for taste. And, you know, like,
that's important.
Yeah, like, so I still do that. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just, you know, then, you know, horror movies. I mean, it's just everything ties together with it. And you know, plus I love the dark and spooky, so yeah.
Well, for me, I've done costuming. I've loved costumes. I never call it cosplay. I'm a generation. It's costuming, but that had, you know, that probably helped me let into costuming. But what mostly for me, what Halloween wasn't just the costumes or even the candy, though I love that. I mean, a generation getting it. I can tell you a candy story that was not spooky either. Was funny. Happened to friends of mine. I didn't go to that house, but it actually led me to write a little article for Horror Writers Association. What happened to me on Halloween? It was weird. But what was that? You could read ghost stories, and I used to read everything on Halloween. Believe it or not, as a kid, I'm out and get all those books at the library on Halloween. You know, started and all that, and then you get all the ghost stories. And you try to talk to your friends, and it was just cool to make a ghost story and see if you could scare them. And I was a young kid, but I was doing this ideas in my head how to do that. And I would tell them, like, around close to that month of Halloween, we had this one schoolyard where there was this goat next door tied to this shed. And I started telling them, yeah, it's Halloween. And you know, did you hear the story about there's a man, a ghost that haunts that place? And he, the goat's his goat, but if you go in there and bother that goat, he's going to get you and eat you. And at first kids go, oh, no, no, but they eventually started believing me because I like to do that sort of thing. That was that kind of thing. So I like the spooky stories and all that stuff like that. So it's just something about the monster. Well, even before the Addams Family, I grew up as a kid, little kid, watching the Twilight Zone.
Mm.
So that was my start on all this really spooky stuff. So I guess I had parents that let me do this, but, you know, if it was something scary, I would let them know. So they didn't really bother to me. I just like to watch all the scary stuff and talk about the scary stuff and read the scary, you know, scary stories and stuff.
Yeah, it was the same with Sunday mornings. They had old episodes of Twilight Zone, Tales from the Dark Side, Tales from the Crypt, the heavily edited versions. They were about 15 minutes long. They were able to fit two in there. And Dracula, the series.
Oh, the old classic monster stories.
Some of them, yeah. And then also like Forever Night. So that was my every Sunday morning for me as a kid, right?
Love that show. So for me, I grew up in a very large household with a bunch of very much older brothers and sisters, so I was introduced to horror at an entirely too young age. But I loved it, and I still love it. But for me, Halloween was always, because I was an incredibly introverted and shy child, it was the ability to put on a mask and be something I wasn't. And people admired me for what I did and gave me candy for it. And I know it's not just the candy, but it really was an opportunity for me to go out and not be Carol. And it was like, okay, I don't have to be self-conscious. I'm something completely different. And that's what Halloween just afforded me. And so for my youth, it was just like, oh, thank God, it's Halloween. I don't have to be Carol for a day. And as I grew older, I just loved horror stories. So I would just watch all the horror movies and read all the horror books, and I'm like, I just like this stuff. And I like the aesthetic, so it became, okay, let's go shopping. And it's not candy anymore, because I'm, you know, far beyond trick-or-treating age. But going to the store and finding Halloween decorations, that's trick-or-treating for me now. It's like, yay, I can buy this stuff now. So that's kind of my trick-or-treating as an adult.
For me, it really is being drawn into the darker stuff that any other time people would be like, are you okay?
I have that a lot. Are you okay?
You know, don't have to have a meeting with the counselor during October. It's nice. Because when I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to dress goth or buy goth things. But I definitely had the goth mentality where I was just fascinated by darkness, by death. I had read Poe and Frankenstein and Dracula and basically any kind of like classic horror thing that I could get my hands on by the time I was 9. Just because I was so drawn to it and there wasn't enough on TV. Every ghost story book that was out there, all the ones that had the pictures of ghosts and stuff like that, and talking about the Flying Dutchman. I would always check out of the library. In fact, I was the only person who ever checked it out of the library. They eventually told me I could just keep it the whole year. I just had to bring it back at the end of the year, and I was like, sweet. But of course, the ultimate for me was scary stories to tell in the dark.
You know, I'm a generation that, this is way before my generation, scary, but I remember all those stories. They were actually at one point somewhere else, just the other guy later, what changed and put of that. So I used to remember reading those stories, but it was never as compiled at that time. Scary story, it was actually all the different legend, like the finger, the come out, you know, you've got my finger and come get, bring it back to me. So I remember all that stuff. I'm thinking, that was out way before, you know.
Oh, yeah. The Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, Irving...
Stories you can tell around a curtain.
Irving
Kershaw.
White Christmas.
He just compiled all of these stories, if you're not familiar with Scary Stories, that he compiled all of these stories that had been around forever, that had been told around campfires, beneath flashlights for decades, for generations. And he compiled them all into this one list. And those stories, many of them silly, very cheesy, Coupled with the artwork, and I'm
Alvin Schwartz.
Thank you. Is the author, but I can't remember the artist's name. Thank you. Those imagery was so creepy. There were some that I would, even though I loved them, I would flip the page because I couldn't look at them. I'd put my hand over it to read the story for the 17th time that day. And it's,
do we have names?
Stephen Gammell. Yeah.
Yeah, Stephen Gammell.
Now, if you don't understand, if you don't remember what the artwork looks like, it is so creepy that, in fact, they either did or were threatening to release a version of the all three of the books with somebody else's artwork in it because those had been banned at most school libraries.
Yeah.
Because the artwork itself was so creepy.
They were removed from my elementary school. I had to actually go buy them because they were removed from the elementary school library. So I'm like, well, screw that. I'm going to go buy them. And oddly enough, we had a house in our neighborhood that gave nickels on Halloween rather than candy. So I hit him up like, I don't know, 20-50 times.
Same and costume, went, just mustache.
Yeah, just like, you haven't seen me before. And we bought the book because I'm like, I had enough money to go buy the book. So I'm like, great, I can go buy some horror stories now.
I can't say I'm surprised that my library still had it, saying as the town that I was in was so small that it was Ophir, California, and the post office burned down, and then it was no longer a town, and it got absorbed into Auburn, California. So Ophir doesn't exist after the post office burned down. So the fact that they still had banned books doesn't really surprise me. So what is something that in the real world has actually given you a scare that couldn't even compete to any sort of a haunted attraction that may have scared you? Why don't you guys think about it? Because that one can be tough, because it could be something as like, oh, I opened up a letter, nah, IRS. It could be something like that, or something that is supernatural-based. Is there anything that you guys can remember?
You mean real world, like something real or not?
Something outside of a haunted house, or a haunted attraction or something like
that. Well, okay, the only thing I could say other than, because I paranormal investigate, so I see ghosts and stuff, I can tell you stories. And very few of them have really scared me, but twice. But what really scared me when I was in eighth grade, my landlady gave me, and my parents let them, I got the first time for Shirley Jackson, Haunting of Hill House, and then we've always lived in the castle. Well, it was eighth grade, I was in science class, I finished my work ahead of time, I was really good at that, and he said I could go ahead and read my book, because everybody else was still working on the work. So it's a bright, sunny day. This is in California, okay? In Oklahoma, coming through these big windows. So it's not like, and I'm full of room of kids working. I was like, there's no reason to be scared of anything. And I've read the book so far through there. I got to the scene where it's in the, where they're alone in the bedroom and the guys will chase something outside of them. So I'm alone reading this. That's when I really got, for the first time, scared. Literally, shitless is the word, I guess. And it was that book by Shirley Jackson, In a Daylight. To this day, I always say it, like people talk about Stephen King. I said, well, he took two books and it had to be a night alone in a bedroom, which is very possible when you're reading alone. It will, you imagine. But In a Daylight, with a room full of people, no reason, and she did it. So I could say that's probably, and if you can count that in the real world, I was really reading it. That scared me. So to me, I can say she had a really, yeah, that scared me, that one part section of the book. She has.
The only thing that really, that I can remember is a while back ago, I had this weird dream about someone that I worked with. And when I woke up and you ever get that feeling like you're not sure if it was really a dream or if it actually happened, right? Got to work, said person was working there with me, and then kept on talking to me and looking at me in a manner like they knew what I was dreaming of. And it was the creepiest feeling I felt. Never did come out and say, like, you know, I never told them what my thoughts were, you know, and what I actually dreamed about, but it was weird. I don't know. Like, I don't have any other words than that. It's, no. But,
and that's exactly...
But, yeah.
Being scared isn't necessarily... Those are jump scares. As a hunter, I always try to avoid those. Those are cheap pops. Those are easy to do. I can walk up behind somebody and go, boo, and they'll jump. There is no craft to that. There's no art to that. But if you can make somebody feel truly uneasy or uncomfortable, think about any time that you've been scared for your life, it's not because something jumped out at you. It was because maybe somebody was just looking at you the wrong way.
Yeah.
Or something about where as they're staring at you, they're picturing you in a bikini, but as like a large chicken bone because they just want to eat. You know, it's all of those kinds of things. I was making eye contact with that young lady back there. So it's something like that. That's what makes you uneasy. That's what gives you that creep factor. That's what scares you, not just somebody, you know. But yeah, you have your hand up.
Oh, I thought you were asking for audience stories, but then I realized you weren't, so go ahead.
Oh, not yet. Yeah, we'll absolutely get to you guys because I think that'll be really good. And we actually may, for those of us that have experience working in a haunted house, and see if there's some way that we can actually do something
with
that.
Turn your story into their next reality.
Exactly. And because of the art of that is important, because when you're doing anything Halloween oriented, whether it's, you know, you're working at a haunt or you just want to do a decoration that's creepy because you got a Halloween party, you know, or if you're a filmmaker using that as a scene for your film or for your book or anything like that, that can be a really fun thing to do. But let's go ahead and how about you?
So my real life story isn't paranormal or anything. It was all in my head because I used to work Renaissance Festival, and for 2 years I traveled around the country. I basically moved from festival to festival. And we would travel from festival to festival in caravans because this was the early 90s, so it was pre-cell phone, if something happened, you had to find a payphone. So you couldn't just call somebody on your cell phone. You had no other means of communication. And we were traveling through Nebraska, and I had actually fallen behind. And I blew a tire out. And I'm alone in my car with this shredded tire in the middle of buttfuck Nebraska. And for a half an hour, I just sat there and went, I'm dead. Some creature is gonna come out from the corn, probably children, and they're gonna kill me. Any part of me. And they're just gonna have this tracker sitting on this side of the road with a shredded tire, and they go, that was the last part, time we saw her.
Oh, they'll find the parts they want.
A cop pulled up. And again, I'm sitting in my car going, I'm still dead, because this is a Nebraska cop, and he's just going to kill me. But he actually helped me change my tire.
Yes.
So he did.
So
I got back on the road like an hour and a half later. But for that hour and a half, I was just terrified. Because I was completely alone in a state where I knew no one, and my friends were long gone, and I'm like, I'm going to die, and no one's going to find what's left of me. So, no paranormal, just every day. I've watched way too many horror movies, and I still watch them.
Enough to survive.
Yeah, and I still watch them. So.
Well, and in fact, one of the segments that she does on GRD is the Scream Queen Survival Manual.
Yeah,
where they
just determine if I would survive a horror movie.
And she breaks it down to where whoever the people, if it's a bad guy, she's like, yeah, I would have survived because I wouldn't have done the dumb shit that those people did.
But sitting in that car, that was terrifying because it's like, I don't know what to do. Yeah, I can change my tire, but I'm scared to get out of the car.
For me, I'd say that, it wasn't like, you know, but it was just the creepy, uneasy feeling. It was a little bit similar to what Searings said. But this one was, I used to have night terrors. And my dad was really clever when I was little. He told me that he would lock the nightmares in the closet. And from then on, I didn't have night terrors. I'd still have restless dreams, I'd still have bad dreams, but they weren't as bad as they used to be. And then whenever I would have a night terror, I would wake up, I'd go up and I'd turn the light on and I'd look and I'd see that my closet door was open. And I would close it, go back to bed, no problem. And what I started to realize was that I subconsciously knew that it was open, and I didn't check to see if it was open, and that was why I had a nightmare. And it wasn't until I was 18 that I asked my dad, I was like, Dad, why do I have this compulsion to make sure that the closet door is closed whenever I go to bed? And he told me the story, and I was like, oh shit, that's genius. That's fantastic. But one of the reoccurring dreams, so the night terrors, they weren't nearly as bad unless the closet door was open. But I would start to have these reoccurring dreams, the same one, just over and over and over again. And it always involved this one young girl. It was a young girl in a black dress. She had her hair in a ponytail. She was same age as I was. And it would come up about once a week or so. And for years, I would have this once a week. And she would age as I did. And it wasn't until, I'd say probably about 3 or 4 years later, we were driving down, because we lived in Sacramento, and we were going to Great America, which was in Southern California, so many hour trip. And we were driving, and I noticed that there was this state fair that was, or a county fair that was going on the side of the highway. And as we were driving, I looked out, and up against the chain link fence, looking out, looking directly at our car, following it with her eyes and her head, was that person I had been dreaming about for years and years and years. And it, I mean, even right now, skin's kind of crawling. It weirded me out. No idea what the fuck it was about. Have no idea anything about it. I have never personally met anybody that matched that description or anything like that. But that was something that just made me so... just feel uneasy for the rest of the drive, that I just could not relax the rest of the drive. And I was probably, I think, 10 or 11 at that point when I finally saw her. But it just unnerved me so much that it just, I was like, okay, I don't know what the hell that was. And I'll probably never know. Which is part of the weirdness about it, is because I will never know what the hell that was. Was that somebody that I was supposed to meet? Was that somebody I was supposed to help? Was that somebody, was I envisioning something that somebody who was so plain looking that 15 people could have met that description that I would come across every day? I don't know, but the immediate connection and recognition that seemed to be between her and I was just insane. And so that's just the creepiest thing that I've had, besides my dad jumping out of a stalk of corn barking like a dog one time. For some reason, I imagined it was the neighbor's big Rottweiler with a Chihuahua head. So it could have been that too. I'm not sure. So let's actually, because most of ours are incredibly difficult to adapt into something that, aside from telling the story to somebody, make them feel creepy. And So it can be difficult to take something that actually scares us, and that's the nature of fear and whatnot, and certainly within Halloween, to make it into something that can scare somebody else. So I'm curious, just for a few minutes, you guys want to see if we can't turn somebody's stuff into either a story or a feature in a haunt that we can get back to Halloween?
Yeah.
So I believe you had your hand up first.
Yeah, mine probably is not the best frightening moment in a haunted trip, but probably the most frightful moment of my entire life at this point was, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Belle Isle. I'm sorry, my brain is dead.
Belle Isle.
Yeah, I call it Belle Isle. Yeah, all right. In order to get there, you park in this one area, and then you have to walk under the bridge on this, like, hanging bridge thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's terrifying, but you are over the river, and you're really high up. Well, I went with a bunch of friends with my 3-month-old daughter in a little carrier car seat. Yeah, you know the story. And she's very heavy, and of course, it's just taking forever, so my friend offers to help carry her so we can take turns, it's not so heavy. And this is one of those moments where I'm just like, no, I don't like you anymore. My friend with the carrier is holding her, and then she's all like, oh, let me just fix my hair real quick, and I'm going to lean the carrier against my body and derail it of the thing that is hanging over the rocky river that is 50 feet below, and just like fix the hair. And I literally was just like, you are never touching my child again. But it's funny to tell it, but in the moment, it was just like, I literally went through like the process of what was happening and what I would do and how, and like, it's just like, I know what I would do now because I've had to sit there and think about it. But it's just,
you're like analyzing how quickly you could grab the bassinet while pitching them over.
But I didn't get there. You were ahead of me over. I was like, I'm diving, and I'm hoping for my life, because if I do actually live, then I will have a chance to save my daughter. If I don't live, then I don't have to see it happen. It was horrifying.
Well, I think in something like that, it's really about your kid in danger and feeling helpless. Like, can you get to them in time?
And he dangles the baby like that.
I think there is a way to get a little bit of that kind of a vibe. I think with if you have a group, because most people when they go into any sort of a haunted house, they go as a group because, you know, They have the support, the moral support of the people that they're with.
Just safety in numbers.
That too. If you separate people from that group.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's actually one of the things when I zombied at Holograms. That was one of my tactics. So because they always.
So you as a zombie would separate?
Well, yeah. So my area that they would come through, they had these mazes kind of set up out of. Just different planks, and it was like some were like really narrow, some was wide, you know, some was the wrong way, dead end kind of thing. And so, and the way the entire haunt path, it's like six different scenes that you go through. Like it's the mansion, then there's an outside break, and then you're in like a prison, and then there's an outside break, and then you're through like this overturned school bus, and then there's an outside break, and then when they finally get to me, I was towards the end, so I just imagine like they gotta be mentally exhausted at this point. You know, they've been like scared, and then nope, something else. You know, and then so when they finally get to me, and they're, you know, they come in like groups of like 5-10, and so I'm waiting. I find this one spot in the maze that I just kind of like right when they turn the corner. And as soon as they turn the corner, and once they realize that I'm there, and I'm just lurking and blood's drooling out of my mouth and all that, and so they turn the corner, and then I get the not quite the jump scare, but you know, it's that moment of surprise that shit, someone's here, you know, and then what I do is I just kind of like, you know, growl and snarl as they walk past, but then I just find that one person that looks so uncomfortable, and I am on them until the end of my path, which is a pretty decent distance, and when they finally realize that they can get away from me because my path ends. If the next stage is on cue, chainsaws are ripping. I'm like, take them to the slaughter. So, yeah.
Which, incidentally, here's a little trick for you. Most haunt actors, they'll go for the person in the middle. They don't necessarily go for the first one or the last one.
The person in the middle is the person that's the scaredest because they're like, I don't want to be on the outside.
Right. Exactly.
I was that person for the longest time.
Exactly.
I was like, nope, don't touch me. I'm going to be in the middle.
You can smell the fear of that particular person.
That's usually the shortest person.
Yep.
Because my roommate is 4'11". And they, whenever we go to haunts, they target her.
Yep.
Because she's just tiny.
Yep.
And I'm like, you know, she'll probably kick your ass.
There was one time I was at a haunted house, and I was in the middle of the group, but this time, this was after I was, like, not scared of haunted houses anymore. And I was in the middle of the group just because they threw me in the middle, because they're like, she's tiny, she'll get lost. So a guy pulls into the middle of our group, and right next to me revs the chainsaw, and I literally just turn around and scream at him, like just yelled at him, like just screamed, like not scared, just like angry scream, and he just looked at me and then walked away. He was like, I'm not messing with her.
Now, Pamela, how would you use that in a story with that kind of... that fear, like what kind of a scenario could you get? Because it's already a very terrifying story, whether you're a parent or not.
I actually wrote a scary story. Pumpkin Hollow is about a haunt that really is not quite a haunt. It's a real thing, a haunted town that uses it.
But specifically with the example that the young lady gave with her baby. Friend was having, like,
well, number one, as a mother, I know what fear is about your child, and that's one of the scariest things. The thought of probably it dropping and slipping from your hands as you try to save it and it's falling. Number one, I had to admit the one dream as a kid I used to have that scared me is the falling dream. So I could feel that probably with the baby in a bassinet falling down. And that's probably one of the most scariest things, that what if you slip as you try to save the kid, but it does slip through your fingers. And that's probably the story I would have put into to fear, because I would know as a mother how I fear and how every mother feels and all that stuff. So, of course, I would probably wish I'd never been with the person that was obviously doing what your friend did. I would have killed them, so, but that's okay. But, that would be the scariest thing, is if it still slipped no matter what and fell down and there's that water or whatever it's heading toward under, off the bridge. And that would be the scariest thing I could write, because that's what someone would feel, what happens to the mother, you know. And maybe after that, you could write the story about what happens to her. Is she haunted by the child still afterwards? And her house, she would hear a crying baby all the time and stuff. Is it really a ghost, or is it her own imagination of her guilt that she let the child fall that way easily?
The telltale toddler.
Hashtag not wrong.
And I believe you had your hand up just a moment ago.
Yes. I highly enjoy being scared, getting scared. I like to put myself into a headspace when I go to get scared, so that I can get even more scared. And what I do love, because I think this is what you're looking for. This is also
like, yeah, just something that scared me.
The focus, I like the jump scares. I like the jump scares that are like different sounds, because I know like the Charms uses the like noisemakers, and you're not expecting that sound from a person trying to scare you. You're expecting like a but really it's like, and it's just like, oh, that was wrong, and I feel weird now. I love when they will follow you, like you said, and because there's that focus, that it's not that like we're all victims here. No, I'm the victim here, and that's really fun. But one of the most unsettling things that's ever happened to me in a walkthrough was, and I've been touched before in a walkthrough. It was one where you sign a thing and they're
like, a little bit.
That was super fun, but. Was when there was like, it was something focused on dolls, which you wouldn't necessarily need this, but you suddenly went from the hallway experience, essentially, the maze thing, into a large room full of mannequins, all dressed the same. And you knew that there was at least one person among them positioned that would get you, and there was no point of contact, like a wall, where you were safe, and there was a strobe, and you had to navigate through all of the mannequins, and there was no path through the mannequins. You had to figure out which way you wanted to go through them, and any way could be the wrong way.
That's awesome. See, to me, that's like, and if somebody turns around and gets you, that's not like a classic jump scare. Like, to me, a jump scare is something that is self-contained. It is its own thing. If something is set up, like with what you were talking about, there's the crash. You can see that there's blood on the ground. So you know that there was a body. Then it's the anticipation of when the scare happens. So even if you jump out of them, to me, that's not a jump scare. That is a proper scare, yeah. Because there's a setup.
Well,
if like a jump scare to me is if you are walking through the woods and you know it's hillbilly woods, and a clown with a chainsaw jumps out. And it's like, what the fuck does a clown with a chainsaw have to do with this? No. Like, pig mask, sure, I'll give you that. Hillbillies love their pigs. But if it doesn't tie into the theme, if the scene is not set in some way, shape, or form. Like, to me, like a lot of people will refer to the scene from Alien when the cat jumps out. As a jump scare. That to me it isn't, because at that point in time it's established that there are aliens around. There are critters everywhere. Every sound could be one of those aliens, you don't know, one of the xenomorphs. And then as she's investigating something, that's when the cat jumps out. That's not a jump scare to me. That is a proper scare, because the tone was set. That was, you knew something was gonna happen. It just happened to be the cat instead of one of the xenomorphs.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think foreshadowing, that's proper storytelling.
Well, and also, like, for me, you know, you were talking about, you know, the car, the overturned car, so obviously something very bad happened. Mm-hmm. For me, it's I think the scare is in more of something should be here and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it? As opposed to, oh, there it is.
Yeah, it's not gratuitous.
Yeah.
It's everything serves a point, and that is the...
So that I like, you know, finding that spot. So it takes them, like, okay, there's a maze. Okay, someone's going to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they walk in, and they're, like, creeping in. No one's there. And they're like, okay, now where is this guy? And then it takes them a few twists and turns, and then there I am. And then I single out the one who's petrified, and then I follow for a mile, and, you know, mm-hmm. So...
I like it.
Going back to your alien thing, mm-hmm. Yeah, the cat is a proper scare. I think the true jump scare in that movie is the actual burst of blood from John Hurt, that initial...
Yeah.
Because you have no idea what the fuck is going on. The first time you watch that, you don't know. And now you're today. Exactly. So they're just as scared as you are. Because Ridley Scott told them nothing. And that initial... That first time I saw Alien, I was like, oh my god, this is brilliant. And that was terrifying, because what the hell just happened? He was just eating. But yeah, so I can't stand poorly done jump scares. But perfect jump scares are actually really difficult to...
That's a very good movie. That first time I saw it was at a convention, not in the theaters when it came out. And my husband finally got me to go see it, and we came out. And someone said, oh my gosh, she looks green. Did she see Alien just now? My husband said, yeah, she saw Alien.
And they always classify it as sci-fi. It's actually gothic horror.
Mm.
It's perfect gothic horror.
But it's on a spaceship, so it's sci-fi.
But it's sci-fi.
It's sci-fi horror.
There's Alien and stuff. But no, if you read gothic horror, that is gothic horror.
And it's actually also the word body horror. I'm learning this from this thing we've been writing, actually, my first body horror this last week, and we've been learning that. And Alien would be definitely body horror. So, yeah, you don't want something inside you coming out. No. Something about that at all.
Going back to the story about the child. I have children, I'm kidding. So, what is one of your favorite Halloween traditions? Whether it's something that you've always done or something you're planning on doing from here on out. Because, yeah, I have a weird new one, but I also have some classic standards, so that's my
throwing them.
I will tell you my new weird one. I will tell you my new weird one. David S. Pumpkins. I don't know what it is about that stupid... I don't know what it is about that stupid sketch and the animated special they did last year, but I love it. It is so ridiculous and silly and dumb, but I love it. So, for me, watching the David S. Pumpkins holiday special and the SNL sketch that generated all of it, or the genesis of all of it, those are my new Halloween traditions. But I also got some classic ones, but we'll go ahead and start with you.
I think mine's more certain movies.
Mm-hmm.
Nightmare on Elm Street was the very first horror movie I ever saw. I'm still a big fan of that. That whole series. Scream, brilliant.
The first one. We can agree the other ones.
Yeah, well, right. Yeah, it kind of became a parody upon itself. But D. Snyder's Strangeland. Another one.
The one with Linda Cardellini in it?
Yeah.
Or Cardellini.
Yeah. And the special appearance of Robert Englund.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. My favorite part is when D. Snyder reforms and becomes like the preppy, and there's a guy in the front lawn with the sign that says, "We're not going to take it." That for me, I think it's movies, but really now it's actually the music, like, you know, my online thing that I do every day. It's pretty amazing, like, once you start looking up how much Halloween themed, and I'm not talking like just thriller and stuff like that. I mean, like,
there's a lot of Halloween based songs in there. Probably I would probably even say even more than Christmas songs.
I don't know about more, but I think there's more varied. Yeah, it's not all.
Definitely takes over Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Way more than Thanksgiving songs.
Is there any Thanksgiving carols?
I know of one.
I'm sure Adam Sandler has one.
I'm not even talking about that. But yeah.
Just eat it. How about you, Mel?
Gosh. Well, when my son was younger, we used to read Legend of Sleepy Hollow. Mm-hmm. And I read with him. We read that every year, and we watched at least the animated version that they had out. You know, it was definitely felt like perfect fall and perfect Halloween stuff. And for me, it's a certain type of movies too that I'll watch, and I have put away. But if I could get ones even based Halloween, scary ones like Trick or Treat came out, and then there's another one actually called Trick or Treat, but it was a Rock and Roll Star. Was the so I got both of that too. So there's two types of Trick or Treats, right?
You're with the one with Gene Simmons and Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah, that DVD.
The cousin from.
Skippy.
Yes.
They were family ties.
But he was in that, right?
Yeah, he was Skippy. Yep. He was a big fan. Gene Simmons gives him like the unreleased tape of like this rock god.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And the rock god was neither Ozzy Osbourne nor Gene Simmons.
No, Ozzy Osbourne was a very upset
conservative preacher.
Yeah, conservative preacher guy.
Well, that's right. I think we riffed that back when I used to do a Cineplex 13, and what it was is we would show the old classic campy horror movies, and it was like a free-for-all MST3K, so everybody could make jokes at the screen and whatnot, and yeah, we did that one. Oh, that was a special movie.
But yeah, all the horror films, classic one, the classic Universal Monsters, and the original Haunting, forget the remake, that's not even close to the book. Mm-hmm. But the original Haunting. Now they got Netflix has got the Haunting of Hill House coming out, and that's month. I want to binge that. That's going to be adding probably to my and stuff like that. But yeah, I watch those, and then I try to read one scary book for that I can find that's new or different. Saying that like Christmas, I'll probably find something. I actually found a good Christmas scary one with zombies.
Oh.
It was a comedy thing, but it was interesting to find. So there's stuff out there.
For a minute there, I thought you were
going
to say
Silent
Night, Deadly
Night. So if I can find something
different
than normal, I'll use it as a book to read. So, yeah, stuff like that. But I have certain traditions, yeah. Especially used to love doing it, but the Legends of the Bell, my son, that was kind of a connection for both of us together to get him to enjoy something that way together. Of course, he's 40 now. I don't want me to be, but it's, yeah, I like that we would... I get him to get into the old stories too, good stuff like that. And then we would watch the scary movies. I got him into it because he was into Freddy Krueger. He's a generation Freddy Krueger. And I say Friday 13. I said, well, those are slash and dash. Let me give some real horror to watch. So we got him. He's now addicted to the Bruce Campbell ones, now the movies because of me. And he actually watched the original Haunting with me, and said it was really good in black and white. So I said, let's get you some real, not just slash, but let's give you some really good old-fashioned, good scary stuff with ghosts and demons and everything else. So.
Mm-hmm. Let you go.
So my most recent tradition has to be to find a local haunt, someone new.
I used to do those, too.
Go to a haunt and just see if it scares me. Most of them don't because I'm logically minded and I know they're all actors. So
the chance of getting inside.
And some aren't that really scary.
I have to
either.
Sign a waiver. I'm like, hey, you're not touching me. No, I don't think so. But my usual Halloween tradition is I take a weekend where one day I watch all of the Universal Monster movies because I love them. And then I have Let's Make Carol Uncomfortable Day where I watch all of the movies that I own that make me incredibly uncomfortable. Like Eraserhead, an audition.
Fried Green Tomatoes.
Yeah, that makes me very uncomfortable. Just, you know me too well.
The Love Guru.
Just a lot of movies. Try and find some new movie that will make me just really uncomfortable. Not necessarily scared, just really kind of uncomfortable.
Human centipede?
That one did nothing for me. Actually, because I was like, these girls are fucking stupid.
Well, yes.
you just walked into what's his face from Lex, and you're gonna walk into his house. Why are you doing this? No, you totally deserve to be sewn to each other.
Oh my god.
Wow.
Well, you make a fantastic crisis counselor.
Totally deserved it.
Just you were turned into a what? No. Human centipede didn't make me uncomfortable. Human centipede too, I couldn't make it through. I was like, no, this film is just...
There's a new one for it. It's on Netflix. It still bothers me. I have nightmares after watched it. The one guy being made into a walrus.
Tusk.
Yeah,
that was Tusk made my uncomfortable list. I'm like, okay, this was fine up until the end, and now I am
Kevin
uncomfortable.
It did make me uncomfortable. I was just like, oh, Kevin Smith, you made the B movie of your dreams. It's fantastic. I love it.
I was like, oh, God.
I kept seeing that guy the longer in my head.
I did not see that coming.
My mom has a fire stick, so one of her things she likes to do is to look up, like, I don't even know if you call them B movies, because they're like
C or D movies.
They're like huge movies. Because it's just somebody with the random camera at home makes action movies.
You can find a lot of those on Amazon Prime, too.
Yeah.
So my mom was like, let's do this. This is fun. And so we were like, let's find a shark one. And we found one called Sand Shark.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, no.
Maybe it was Land Shark, because both of those were options, and one of them was the one we watched. So it was like a shark that could actually like swim through the sand.
But no,
sharks. It was so bad. It was hilarious. It was one of my favorite moments ever, just to sit down and watch that with my mother and just be like, why is this so bad, but I want to see what happens. It actually inspired me to be all like, you know what? I am going to try to make my movie I want to make, because if this is on the fire screen,
they can do that.
I was like, I'm glad you put this here, and I can like maybe be like mildly as okay as this. So, this is fine.
Go ahead, and this will be the last one, and then I'll talk about mine, because then we got to wrap it up. Go ahead.
Okay. It's not something that's a tradition yet, and I fervently hope I never get the opportunity for it to be. But
crafting a human centipede?
No! That would seem better. Well, about 17 years ago, I was recovering from breast cancer, and I had to... go through chemotherapy, and all of my hair had fallen out. So, okay, Halloween. Okay, great. Glow-in-the-dark paint. I can do wondrous things with this. So I had a turtleneck and black gloves, and I made arrangements with the neighbor next door to route kids to my house. So the only light that would hit the person who was opening the door was coming from behind the kids, and all they saw was a glowing, disembodied head. I still cannot, maybe y'all can help me with this, I still can't figure out whether I'm proud of this or embarrassed as hell, but my first person at the door, I literally scared the pee out of a 4-year-old princess.
Oh no, you should be proud of that. You should be proud of that. My most terrifying moment. This disembodied head.
However, it was really great. Later in the evening, I got to be the hit of the junior high school boy crowd. We didn't need my neighbor anymore. They were sending their friends to our house. And it's like, on the one hand, I hope I never have the opportunity to do that again, but if I do, I'm going to expand on that somehow.
Well, that's awesome. For me, one of my traditions is there's one particular documentary that I watch. It's about Bob Burns. Now, if you're not familiar with him, he has been an avid collector of Hollywood props and such. And for many, 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 many years, he would make some of the most elaborate either yard displays or yard haunts ever, where he would have a scene that would be reenacted. And because he was in California, he'd be able to get a bunch of fantastic special effects operators, prop builders, and whatnot, and they would volunteer their time. And some of the earliest stuff, they actually made a time machine from the HG, from the movie Time Machine, based on H.G. Wells. And they had it to where when the lights would go out as he was traveling through time, they would flip the wall panels and it would look like they traveled to a whole new place. And they had an animated projection of the monster from the movie and people in Morlock costumes. They had actually made a giant lagoon and had a creature come out from the Black Lagoon while the kids were sitting there seeing a show. He had done one for Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, where they had blue lights on and he had blue makeup on that you couldn't see. And then when he would drink and transform, they'd switch the light to red. And that blue makeup that he had on would then be revealed, essentially, and it would be kind of make his skin look gnarled, and it completely changed the actor. It made him look like somebody completely different. Just these little kinds of things. And one of the biggest ones that he did was he did one, an Aliens one, right when the movie came out. And as they were building it and stuff, and he would usually have it kind of run for a week or so, and as it got closer to Halloween, some of the folks from the studio heard about what he was doing, and they shipped over some of the props. So he had an APC out there on his yard. He had screen-used costumes and props and stuff in his haunt. And he did it for many, many years. And it detailed, in the documentary, details all of the things that he would do over the years. And all these little tips and tricks and stuff like that, which was fantastic. Another one I tried to watch, it was a TV show called Making Monsters. It was one of the best reality shows I've ever seen, where it's all about Distortions Unlimited. They're the people that make the big old props, the animatronics and stuff like that. And it was a fantastic family that builds these workers and stuff like that. And they were just silly. They were funny. And they would make big things for Alice Cooper, for Dick Van Dyke, and all of these people. And you get to see all the stuff that they did. And then I will say that there's a lot of other stuff with preparing and planning for the haunt that I put together. Planning what I'm going to get from Spirit Store on November 1st when all the deals are out there and stuff. Planning to make sure that I go to this one particular haunt that's my favorite outside of Raleigh. And then always trying to find a different one to go to that's around there as well. The other thing that I always watch, and because some people may never have seen it, and I want people to give it a shot if they haven't. And that was the remake of The Munsters that came out a few years ago. Mockingbird Lane. It was fantastic. It's difficult to find. I've got a torrent file that I downloaded years ago because they haven't released it on DVD or anything like that. But it was an update. It was a little bit of a retelling of the classic Munster show. And it was absolutely faithful and updated in the best way possible, and it was a delight. I was really upset that they didn't make more, but it gets to exist in this one beautiful little thing before anybody went and messed it up. But anyway, guys, thank you so much for coming out. I wanted to make sure that we had at least a little bit of a palate cleanser after talking about some of the things that scared us. But we hope that you guys have a happy and safe Halloween coming up here very soon. And we definitely encourage you to, if you like haunted attractions, try to find one, a new one that's in town. Or just one you've never been to before. Because you might find one that's even better than the ones that you've seen before. And you might find one that's crappy and you never have to go back to it, which is also nice. And I think you know you're going to be finding any kind of haunt you can find. Because you seem to like haunts.
Well, it seems like y'all really know about a lot of haunts that are around here. I don't actually really. And I'm basically wondering if you know of any, like, halfway to the Caney Manor haunt within, like, 4 hours of here.
Well, first of all, McCaney Manor?
No.
They're hacks. The reason why I say this is they are specifically hiring people to torture people. Now,
yeah, and I don't want that.
I understand, but it's important to know because In the home haunt industry, when you have somebody who's basically like, you're signing a waiver for me to punch you in the face.
Yeah.
It's like, no, there is no art to that. There is no craft to that. And he is essentially just, he's a hype man, he's a con man. I wish that he wasn't as big as he was, and I wish that, but he is very good at building up the mystique of what goes on there. And I've talked to a lot of people who've gone through there. I've seen his movies, as he calls them. Of people who've gone through there, and it's just like, I could do that. I literally could just walk up and slap somebody in the face. Like, okay, that's stupid. But in 4 hours, I don't know. I think Chicago had one. I know that's outside of 4 hours. I think there might be one in DC or Baltimore. I can't remember their names, but those are going to be the ones that you sign a waiver. Because there's going to be naked people up against you. There's going to be like people like licking your ear, things like that. Things specifically designed to make you as uncomfortable. Like there, you have zero personal space, both physically and mentally, in a lot of those establishments. And see, the professional ones, they are crafted in a way that is going to take care of you, whereas some of the amateur ones, we'll say. They don't have that concern because they're amateur. They also don't have to have a lot of the safety requirements and stuff. Mm-hmm. And because you signed the waiver, there's fuck all you can do about it if they go above and beyond. And chances are they are, because they don't have, they are not held to the same expectations and liabilities that the professional ones are. So that's why I dig the experience you're looking for. Be very cautious about that. Definitely vet them. Try to talk to people who have been through that. Do a lot of reviews and searches and stuff like that, because when you're dealing with fears, that's something that can fuck you up in a level that you don't realize until it's triggered. We're basically giving ourselves low-level PTSD when we go to haunts. If something really scares us, that's what we're trying to induce trauma onto ourselves, onto our psyche. And so it's very careful. It's very important to make sure that you're going to a place that isn't going to abuse that privilege.
Mm-hmm.
But I would honestly, I would suggest, various haunt forums, like just doing a search for, haunt or extreme haunt. That tends to be a lot of the wording that's used. Mm-hmm. Extreme haunt for anything where there is more of the involve touching and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then just whatever you do, try to find a reputable place.
Thank you.
Yeah, not a problem. So again, guys, thank you so much for coming out. Please scare other people, be scared, enjoy it, it's fun. Thank yous and high fives go out to the wonderful panelists and audience members, plus a big special thanks to RavenCon 13.5. Go to RavenCon.com and get ready to plan 2019. We will be there. Will you? The answer should be yes. Look for more panels from RavenCon at GeekRadioDaily.com.